Our first speaker tonight is Ellen Gould, a member of the Council of Canadians, and she has been giving workshops in Vancouver and British Columbia on the privatization of the public sector. Please welcome Ellen Gould.
So first of all, I want to give a pep talk. You only have about 3 months till the WTO is here. I know that people work very hard on their own causes, but you have an historical role here. And if you don't do something about the WTO, you're going to have to do a lot of work over the coming years. So why don't you put in the effort now? This is a little pitch. Help Sally out, because she's working like a maniac all the time, and put in that extra... Whoa. This mic...
Go ahead.
Okay. So I hope I'm not trying to get blood out of a stone here, but if people can put in that extra push, it would certainly help the people of the world out. And so Seattle has a particular role to play. And I think just the fact that it's Sunday, it's 6 o'clock, and you're all here is a really good indication of what's possible. So I really appreciate that everybody came out. Now, how many people have heard of the MAI? Because I just want to get a sense of my audience here. So pretty well everybody, okay. Because what I'm going to try and do is something that I've done with groups in Canada. And people are always at all kinds of different levels on these issues. So unfortunately, some of this is going to be policy wonk stuff. It's going to be recorded and it's going to union people who will have to take it up in terms of applying this agreement to their own circumstances. So I'm sorry if it's a lot of detail here. I came along with handouts. Everything I'm saying you can pick up. If you're an organization, you can put your own stamp on it and put it out as your own stuff. There's no intellectual property rights in this room. So as Sally mentioned, I work with the Council of Canadians, but that's just one of the many groups that I work with. And just before, when we were waiting in the audience, I was telling someone that my last job was working for the government of British Columbia on an explicitly anti-MAI project. What I did was I worked with different sectors, like seniors, cultural groups, environmental groups, labor, municipalities, analyzing what the MAI would do to their sector. And he expressed surprise that a government would do that. But I think we have to expand our imagination about what we should expect from governments. Because why wouldn't a government help its people understand these agreements? So after I finished working on this project for the BC government, I continue to work with groups on a freelance basis. Partly because once you get into trade and investment negotiation issues, it's hard to turn to anything else. It just seems so incredible what they're doing. But also because I came across documents that seem to tell me in a very explicit way where the MAI is going. And I think the MAI is going into something called the General Agreement on Trade and Services. And I'd like to see a show of hands if anybody's ever heard of that. Okay. Well, that's good. That's more than your politicians, probably. Some people are blaming me here in the audience. So to give some backing on that, I'm going to quote this guy from the Harvard Kennedy School, and he's also a fellow at the Brookings Institution. He came to our WTO hearings in Canada, and he said, and so here's a real broad clue about where the MAI is going from somebody who should know. Absent the attempt to integrate a comprehensive set of disciplines on investment into the WTO, in other words, they don't think it's possible because of people like you that'll oppose it. They're not going to come out with another MAI that's explicitly called an MAI at the WTO because you'd be on them too hard. So instead, he thinks that the looming investment agenda in Geneva offers a lot of scope for moving forward on investment in ways that are of use both to investors and to host countries. And I would surmise that the negotiations that are about to resume under the General Agreement on Trade and Services offer quite significant potential for achieving that objective. So what this policy wonk guy, who's from Harvard, says is that the MAI is going to the WTO through the negotiations on services. So we should take our hints from this guy. They keep dropping really broad clues about what they're doing, and I think we should pay attention. So what is the General Agreement on Trade and Services? The GATS is an existing agreement that is administered by the WTO. I want to emphasize that it's an existing agreement. It's not something that may or may not be signed in the future. It already exists. All the most powerful clauses that we worried about in the MAI, the stuff that doesn't let people gain from foreign investment in their country, the stuff that makes it apply to every level of government, federal, state, county, and even to non-governmental organizations, this is all in the GATS already. This is how the WTO promotes the GATS on its own website. So for me, this is clue number two. The GATS is the first multilateral agreement to provide legally enforceable rights to trade in all services. It has a built-in commitment to continuous liberalization through periodic negotiations. I just want to stop there. That's what I call the Energizer Bunny Clause, because it'll just keep going and going and going until they've liberalized and privatized everything. Okay. So that's built right into the agreement, that they're going to keep meeting and they're going to keep liberalizing all services. And people can say, well, so what? What's a service? Pretty much everything is a service. The only thing, they define service in sort of a flip way by saying that anything that you can't drop on your foot is a service. Okay. And again, in the WTO's own words, the GATS is the world's first multilateral agreement on investment. We should dummy up here. This is what they say. The WTO is saying that the GATS is the first multilateral agreement on investment, since it covers not just cross-border trade, but every possible means of supplying a service, including the right to set up a commercial presence in the export market. So I want to tell you what that'll mean for Canadians. I think Canadian Studies here is partly sponsoring this, so I'll throw in a little application to the Canadian situation. For Canadians, it would mean the death of Medicare. With these provisions in the General Agreement on Trade and Services, as applied to healthcare, it would destroy Canadian Medicare. And that's because our system is based on healthcare provision by nonprofits. You cannot be a private corporation and deliver hospital services in Canada. Yeah. Universal Medicare could not work with the high costs inflicted on healthcare by private corporations. It just wouldn't work. In order for Medicare to survive at all, everybody has to stay in the same healthcare boat, which means that you cannot have private corporations coming in, taking the cream out of the system, which would be wealthy people going to get premium care at private clinics. And why that is, just in practical terms, is that wealthy people, if they're paying the money to get good care, why are they going to turn around and fund a universal Medicare system? They figure that they're being taxed twice. Are you getting anything? Okay. Um, So that's just the practical way of how Medicare would be taken down. If Canada agrees to having the GATS apply to healthcare, then foreign corporations are given the automatic guaranteed right to set up within our territory. And that means that we could not sustain a public healthcare system like we have now. Now, when a former assistant to the U.S. Trade Representative gave a paper to the Brookings Institute this summer, and he just made a sweeping statement. He just said quite categorically that overregulation and restrictions on entry by foreign service providers inevitably result in low quality, high cost, and outdated services. Just, this is the mentality, you know, that that everybody knows this and it's unquestionable. So he makes a sweeping statement that entry by foreign service providers is automatically a good thing. Well, this is demonstrably false in the case of Canadian Medicare. By restricting entry of foreign private medical services into Canada, we've been able to keep our health care costs down. We actually spend less per capita than you do in the U.S., and we have universal coverage. So foreign entry by private multinationals would not be to the benefit of the average Canadian. But this is the mentality of people who work within the trade, within trade departments. It's just the ideology is absolutely firm. They have no questions about the things that they say. But the guaranteed rights the General Agreement on Trade and Services gives to foreign service providers, what's called the National Treatment Provisions, ring any bells for anybody? MAI, National Treatment, can't distinguish between a domestic and a foreign supplier of a service. Perhaps more than any other agreement that is supposed to be about trade, the GATS is far more than this. It is a privatization agreement. It is a deregulation agreement. Rather than its current name, the General Agreement on Trade and Services, it should really be called the General Agreement on the Privatization of Everything, or maybe the General Agreement on Eliminating All Regulation for Everybody. So there's two. Somebody probably could come up with a nifty little acronym for it. I couldn't come up with something that actually fit. But this is an agreement that goes by a false name. It's not about trade. It's about how you rule your own communities. And you see this. I'm going to go into what's exactly in it. And this, I hope I don't lose people here. There is a clause, so if you go to the WTO site, you can actually read this thing. It's sitting right there. It's not that hard to understand in comparison with the MAI.
What is that site?
WTO, www.wto.org. I go to it all the time. It's, and you can just read the agreement right there. So again, it's not something that may or may not happen. This is sort of like a ticking time bomb waiting to go off. It's got a clause in there that might reassure you. It says it doesn't apply to anything that's done in the exercise of governmental authority, which sort of sounds like it protects public services, right? Nothing done in the exercise of governmental authority. But they've written clauses into this that make it useless. Anything done in the exercise of governmental authority, but anything that is done as on a commercial basis is no longer done in the exercise of governmental authority. So why would that be a problem? All kinds of public services now are turning to fee-for-service, right? Libraries. You can probably think of some other examples where public services start to charge. So would they be considered in the public sector or not? They probably wouldn't. Another huge, huge problem with this clause is that it does exempt public services except where there are private competitors. There's private... OK. good. This is a very smart crowd. Why is that a problem? You have private competitors to public schools. You have private competitors anywhere in your territory, anywhere within the US of A, where you have a private supplier of the service, then they're in competition. So, for example, there are people running private library systems in the United States. So your public libraries, the Seattle Public Library is still a public library, huh? Oh, good. Well, anyway, I'm counting a few things. In some places it isn't. It's being, in some states they're having their libraries run by private corporations. So anyways, I can just imagine the trade lawyers looking at this and going, oh, goody, this is great. We can just use this one and do challenge after challenge to public services. There are two key parts of the GATS, the General Agreement on Trade and Services, which tell governments what they can and cannot do quite independently of foreign trade considerations. So even if nobody is, even if Canada or Germany or whoever, Malaysia, is not banging on your door wanting access to your market, you still have to revise your regulations. You kind of go, well, wait a minute, this is supposed to be about trade. This is supposed to be the World Trade Organization. So if you don't have any traders interested in coming into your market, why do you have the WTO telling you what to do in Seattle or King County generally? Like, why? How do they have the nerve, you could ask. You can just see them having this little trade window, and they reach through and they pull everything through it. So everything becomes trade-related, okay? One policy wonk said it's tangentially related. So when they call it the TRIPS agreement, they really mean, rather than trade-related, they mean tangentially related to trade. So there's two big provisions. One's just straight up front called domestic regulation. A whole section in the GATS telling what you can and cannot do with domestic regulation. Talk about in your face, right? There they are. So you come under a WTO magnifying glass. And any corporation, be it domestic or foreign, can demand to go before an appeal board, which your governments have to set up for this purpose. And it has to be independent of your politicians. And then they can challenge anything that has not been done in a reasonable, objective, and impartial manner. Well, if you look at everything from the perspective of enhancing trade or enhancing commerce, a lot of things that governments do can look pretty impartial, like saving the environment or little things like that could look pretty unobjective and not reasonable. So under this agreement, your domestic regulation, not your trade regulations, your domestic regulation, you have to reform it, you have to create a vehicle that private corporations can come and challenge all your laws. Under licensing, the domestic regulation provisions mean that once a sector like health or education are committed to be covered by the GATS, then the WTO sets up a body to determine whether or not the way you license your planners, your doctors, your nurses, your librarians is a barrier to trade. Okay? It will be their call whether or not the licensing for your doctors in Seattle has been set too high. Okay, somebody should talk to the American Medical Association about this stuff. And anything that is looked on as more burdensome, again, in the eyes of the WTO, than required to ensure the quality of a service can be struck down. So this is quite amazing that all of our professionals will be judged by a panel set up by the WTO to see whether or not these licenses are what they call a barrier to trade. A barrier to trade is anything that limits the service. So if you have high standards, you're limiting the number of doctors, and that is a barrier. Well, it's a barrier to high standards, I guess, but it's also, in the view of the WTO, excessively high standards are considered a barrier to trade, so it'd be a no-no. Unlike goods, so I guess I'm making a pitch to say this is even worse than the other stuff. Unlike trade in goods, services, you usually have contact between the consumer and the producer of the service, okay? You take a cab, you deal with the cab driver, right? So you're in communication. Trade in goods can go right across borders. So all the stuff usually that they do in trade agreements deals with that stuff when it comes across borders, like customs, like tariffs. But again, in this way of reaching through the window and pulling your whole society through it, they're saying that domestic regulation can be a barrier when you look at that consumer and service provider relationship, because it limits the number of service providers. And this is according to one GATS expert. The GATS recognizes that trade and services can be hampered either by discriminatory regulatory requirements imposed only on foreign service providers, or by restrictive regulations that are imposed on both domestic and foreign services. So do people get what they're doing here? They're all of a sudden moving right into regulating what you do with your domestic service suppliers. The new round of negotiation on trade and services has to be seen as a key event in facilitating domestic reform of regulatory systems. So, again, a really big hint here, what they're doing. Okay, doesn't have to have anything to do with trade. They just can move in and set these international agreements on services so that you have to reform your local regulations. And remember, it applies to federal, state, county, anybody who has delegated authority from government. So that would include NGOs that administer grants. This is pretty sweeping. So I'll try and give a concrete example. There are a lot of private health corporations worldwide, some of them in Germany, that are looking for places to invest. A German hospital could come into Seattle, and they would have the guaranteed right to set up here, right? So first clause in the agreement. So if a German corporation wanted to establish a hospital in Seattle and run it with cheap help, with doctors who, you know, did marginally in some med school somewhere that you don't recognize, and underqualified nurses, and the local authorities objected, saying you're not meeting high enough standards, the German government could take a complaint to the WTO on behalf of this private hospital, saying that your local authorities were imposing qualifications that are more burdensome than necessary to ensure the quality of the service. Okay? You can tell where corporations are going with this. The U.S. Coalition of Service Industries, which includes Aetna, the healthcare giant, has asked the U.S. government to have the GATS negotiations address the problems, I put problems in quotation marks here, of restricted licensing of healthcare professionals and excessive, what they would call excessive, privacy and confidentiality regulations. Do you know where your medical files are right now? Okay. Trade in healthcare services and records is huge. Databases get sold to drug companies, and all of a sudden you get a message on your email saying, go with this drug company, right? So access to your healthcare data is a really, really powerful thing. and they're going for it. So they could, under the GATS, if healthcare gets covered, go after the privacy of healthcare records, saying it's excessive and it's a barrier to trade. So I hope I've got your attention. Another big hint, and this is what the Coalition on Service Industries has asked Charlene Burschewski, your trade negotiator, to get out of this round of negotiations. And she asked them to tell her what they wanted. So you got to believe that she's listening. In addition, the agreement says you have to allow, so you've got foreign service companies allowed to establish in Seattle. They have a guaranteed right to be here, and they have a guaranteed right to challenge if you set too high qualifications. The other aspects of this agreement are what's called consumption abroad, which means me as a consumer going abroad to get a service. She doesn't seem so terrible, but I'll get into it. The other way is to have foreign service providers given an automatic right to come to your country, to the United States, and deliver the service. Okay? One of the most avid American promoters of free trade, Jagdish Bhagwati, in an article entitled "Free Trade Can Cut Healthcare Costs," has said, "There is clearly tremendous potential to lower medical costs by importing more foreign doctors and exporting more patients." It doesn't mean exporting them like never bringing them back. Exporting them in terms of them doing this consumption abroad of the service. Yeah, I guess if you exported all your sick people, I guess you'd save on it. Never thought of it that way. He recommends that the U.S. issue temporary visas to foreign doctors whose ability to practice would be judged not by your local authorities, but because he views these as tainted with vested interests, right? But by international bodies concerned about freeing up trade. So Bhagwati says, and remember, you can't, you think, oh, well, we just go crazy and we get that overturned, but this is the WTO, right? There's nothing that's ever been overturned, so people just don't take on the WTO because the sanctions that they can authorize are hundreds of millions of dollars each year, plus all the trade retaliation. So you just don't take on these guys. Bhagwati says another way to lower costs is to take patients to where the cheaper health services are, pointing out that open-heart surgery costs one-tenth if it's delivered in India than if it's carried out in the United States. Of course, people can already fly abroad if they want to. People do it all the time to get whatever surgery they want. A lot of people come to the States. But this could be enforced on your public healthcare systems. So Medicaid, for example, could possibly be forced to make patients cross the border, presumably to Mexico, if cheaper treatments were available. So that's one of the ways you can think that consumption abroad would come back to bite you. The whole idea of exporting patients and importing, these guys are so fixed on trade, they forget that these are sick people we're talking about, You don't want them flying off all over the world, coming home. It's just kind of a wild perspective. But again, it's what you get into if you see everything through the lens of trade.